Hi, all. Nicole here. This podcast is intended to inspire you on your personal spiritual journey to inner peace. I am not a psychologist or a medical doctor and do not offer any professional health or medical advice. This applies to the podcast guests and or co-hosts. If you are suffering from a psychological or medical condition, please seek help from a qualified health professional. You are listening to A Psychic Story Kids Edition, a podcast that helps kids and teens shift their vibration, develop their intuition, and become more empowered. If you want to feel a deeper connection to the divine, better understand your purpose, and use your intuition to drive your life, then being here listening now is no coincidence. Welcome to A Psychic Story Kids Edition. Daniel Atkins is an intuitive psychologist and serves as a guide to releasing the lineages and layers of trauma you carry to transform your life. But what does that look like when we want to provide that same opportunity and information to kids or children or teens who may be going through psychic experiences in their life? So welcoming him to the show to talk through that very thing. Welcome.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks so much for having me back here.
Yeah, of course. Well, this is a different podcast, right? So I was feeling guided and led to share more resources and opportunities for children and or teens who may be experiencing psychic abilities, intuitive gifts, that sort of thing. And I was also led to talk to you because you have a very unique viewpoint and expertise and experience in all of this. So I guess I'm just going to kind of hand it over to you and ask you first and foremost, why is this topic about psychic kids and teens important to you?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. I know when we did the other episode, I shared a little bit about my journey. I'll start by sharing a little bit about my experience with kids. After college, I worked in the South Side of Chicago in some schools and saw a lot of trauma and a lot of other things. And ultimately, my path led to the clinical world where I worked with really young kids, as young as 4, and adolescent and teens, college age, and universities and things like that. So I got to see a lot that really resonated and mimicked my own experience in certain ways as someone who struggled a lot as a kid. So this idea of psychic development, intuition, as well as just development in general, with kids is pretty important to me, wanting to create fertile spaces or fertile soil for kids to grow toward the light, because that's what we're all here to do and meant to do. And when I worked predominantly in a clinic, I think that's in the frame of Western psychology, that is ultimately what everyone wants for kids, I believe, parents included, but the systems that we work within often create systems of diagnoses and medications and languaging and messaging that doesn't always create that fertile soil as much as we would like or hope or intend to. And yeah, my own personal journey, my mission for kids and all human beings is to create that kind of expansiveness and frequency of possibilities, whether it is aligning with psychic gifts or any gifts, or just knowing that you are worthy here on this planet is pretty important to me.
Well, thank you for that. And yes, so for people who are listening to this podcast, I have another podcast, A Psychic Story. This one's the kids version, or version right now for adults that have kids who they think may be psychic or have these intuitive abilities, which brings me to my next question for you, which are, what are some things that children might be experiencing psychically or intuitively that, and this is assuming, right, that they've gone through the other typical medical diagnoses or things that we're not going to get into in this episode. So that's aside, adults have taken their children, everything's been ruled out. And aside from that, what are some things that they could be experiencing?
Yeah, such a nuanced and murky area, because even the idea of ruling things out. Like, the truth is that I think people who operate from the more traditional Western frame, whether it's medical or psychological. It's not like looking at cancer and being like, yep, we see it, you got it. A lot of this stuff is based on criteria, it's based on behaviors, and all the behaviors overlap and intersect anyway. So the level of discernment and identifying ultimate truth is, on some level, it's still in the eye of the beholder or the eye of the clinician, or could be, if we allowed it to be, in the eye of the child. And if I'm speaking to children who may listen to this, I think at a foundational level, learning to trust what you feel is of utmost importance. And that word feel gets used in all kinds of ways. We could be talking about emotions. We could be talking about physical sensations. But in my experience, at least, the line between emotions and physical sensations and then sort of energy and frequency and picking up on other people's energy and maybe seeing things and hearing things, it's a spectrum. Like, it's not a qualitative jump or leap for me, because in my, what I would call, I guess, sort of awakening experience, a lot of it was learning to trust how I feel, because I carried some trauma in my body and nervous system. I came to feel a lot of shame around that, as if it wasn't appropriate. Something was wrong that I was so hyper attuned, or something was wrong that I had all these intense feelings. So I think first and foremost, regardless of what kids are feeling, if there's shame, if there's a sense of badness, if there's just these feelings of isolation and alienation, the best thing we can do is create a sense of okayness, and that there's something here, there's something worthy, there's something kids are attuning to. Because kids, particularly I think in these next generation of souls, are here to teach us. They're carrying in wisdom, and this idea that parents are here to teach their kids, on some level, yes, we have experience that we can convey. But on another level, I think for the expansion of consciousness of humanity and in this next evolution of Earth, kids are carrying in a really high frequency and have a lot to give. And the best they can do is really begin to trust and honor what they feel. And I don't know if I could speak to exactly what kids may begin experiencing, but from my perspective, it all starts with feeling, with emotionality. When you walk into a room or an environment that's new to you and you pick up on something, don't beat yourself up or say that, oh, I must just have this anxiety disorder, or there must be something wrong with me. Start, and this is really for parents too, encourage your kids to start trusting what they feel. And if they don't feel a place is safe, it's not just because they're a silly child. It's because their bodies are really attuned. And if we even start with the foundation that all human beings are intuitive, and it's, maybe it's a spectrum, but that particularly kids who have these very malleable brains and haven't, by definition, been so conditioned yet by the world, that likely have more openness to the energies they're picking up on. And quickly what happens is we get conditioned with labels about what that is. Oh, well, you were anxious walking into a classroom. That must be because of this, or you must have this going on.
Yeah. And a hypersensitive person, or it's like, it's just, there's all these diagnoses that go into it, but then no one really gives you the, I don't feel like the tools to say, this is how you actually deal with it. There's these diagnoses that don't equate to anything, right?
This was in a book I read called Cured by a Harvard psychiatrist named Jeffrey Redeker. And he said, he just had a line that I loved. He said, in this country, we're big on labels and light on explanations. And so even, yeah, that idea of highly sensitive person can, not necessarily, but it can convey the idea that there's something wrong with sensitivity. That's in some ways something that needs to be corrected or walked on eggshells around, rather than a gift, rather than something that is nurtured. Nurtured is a really good word for it, because I think sometimes, even if parents or systems or environments want to be supportive, it comes across with fear, with concern, with we need to protect you or wrap you in bubble wrap, which is different than the idea of nurturing, of exposing kids to experiences, allowing them to have experiences and allowing them to get triggered if they get triggered, but ultimately learning how to regulate the nervous system, because regardless of what gifts are coming in, they're getting filtered through the body-mind experience. They're getting filtered through this nervous system and the wiring of our brain, and the nervous system can constrict or it can tighten, which is a lot of what happens in more sort of classical experiences of trauma, as we constrict and our perception gets very narrow and we start to maybe see things as fearful, as threatening or threatening, rather than allowing flow. And because energy flows, emotion flows, gifts, messages, visions flow. So learning how to be in that sort of a jargony way of saying it would be like the parasympathetic state. But for me, and what's been probably most out of anything that I've ever learned or done, breath is the way that we bring safety to. We can talk about things like meditation and stuff, which is really important to me.
Yeah, no, I'd love to get into that in a second. I do want to go back to the trust, because to me, that's probably the key, is trusting in how you feel, whether you're an adult or a child or a teen, and also allowing that safe space if, depending on if you're the caretaker, whether you're a teacher, a doctor, a parent, that sort of thing, into allowing that person to feel that trust too. There was a situation I had growing up where I didn't know, my spidey senses were going way off about a certain person in a situation, and I never wanted to be alone with this person as a child. And then it got to the point where my parents were like, well, did this person do something? Like, what's going on? And it was hard to express as a child that nothing had happened or taken place. But I just had that intuitive sense or knowing I didn't want to be alone with them. I didn't feel safe with them. There's that trust, right? So sometimes not also being able, I guess, to express when you are at a younger age what you're experiencing, but one, trusting it on your own as that person, and then as an adult, allowing that person to experience it, even if they may not have the answers. Because I think sometimes we try to go to the logical sense of, well, if they're feeling this, then something must have happened or there was this. But it's also just your intuition and your God-given gift of being protected, like your instinct, right?
Yeah, and because something may have happened, just because a child doesn't have the words to express it, and also because his parents won't necessarily have the framework to understand what kids are picking up on, doesn't mean that something didn't happen or they're not picking up on some energy of this person. I heard a story recently from a friend who met this woman who had very developed psychic gifts and had a daughter. And as a rule, had shared with this daughter, like, if you ever feel unsafe in any situation, if you ever sense something about any person, you don't have to explain it. We'll just leave. We'll just leave. You don't have to explain yourself to me. Because that's just so beautiful to me, because, yeah, this idea that kids need to explain themselves, like, well, tell me what's wrong with this. Like, kids don't have the verbiage for that. Even if they do know, if parents opt for the basic value of just starting with trust rather than prove yourself for what you feel, it's likely going to work out better for kids, because even if something they're picking up on is ultimately unfounded in the person, it's their feelings are never going to be wrong. There's always going to be a reason. It's never going to be something that needs to be punished or shamed for what's showing up in them. It's just a journey of continuing to learn about what that is, where those emotions come from, if those feelings or spidey senses are from them or the environment. And that's really just a process of discovery that, in my opinion, works best with fertile soil and trust, and basic trust that whatever you feel is okay. And even if you can't explain it, if you get a sense about some guy in a coffee shop, like, we can go and it's okay. Maybe we don't necessarily need to know what's going on with that guy. You don't have to prove it to us, but something's showing up in you. And
right. Yeah. And those are also those situations, which to me are like the more quote unquote real and tangible, because it's a person. But then when you take it to another level, when it's not necessarily the explainable, when it's the spiritual, the energetic, right? Which is also kind of why we're here. Because then if you see things or feel things or sense things that aren't quote unquote there, and then again, adults are asking you to explain it or whatever, then in my way, it's kind of like the little bit of like victim shaming, in a way where you're again expecting or wanting this child or this teen to explain it, when in reality, we should have, in my opinion, the onus of being able to help them kind of create that environment to, whether or not they can explain it, how can we help? Which is why you're here. So what are some things, like you mentioned breathwork and meditation, which is more about processing, but I guess what are some things that we talked about, trust, we in building that up, but some things that adults can also do to just give a safer foundation or place for them to land.
Yeah. And I think it's just like what we're saying, which is, so when you go beyond an experience like with another person, which on many levels is probably easier for most parents to integrate within their frame, because we're like, this makes sense. Relationships can be scary. People can do things that hurt us. Like, it makes sense. But if there's no one there, it goes a step beyond what caregivers may be willing to accept as a reasonable fear. And so the foundation, really, I think, of all of this is if we can just approach children with curiosity rather than this, well, you said you saw something, prove it, or there's no one in your room, or before we jump with kids to explain yourself. Because kids, I mean, on the spectrum of psychic gifts, there's also just kids live in fantasy. Kids are also starting to piece together, what is the real world? And adults are still asking that question. So it's not an unreasonable question to ask. Like, there's not a concrete definition.
I'm still asking the question, what is the real world, you know?
And we should be. That's the thing, is sometimes we think these questions from kids are silly, but they're important. And if we just learn to respect them with a sense of curiosity, like we might respect an adult for asking the question, it's going to create inherently this foundation of safety where kids don't feel like they're having to defend themselves and their nervous system is going to, oh, I have to prove myself and I can't prove that I saw something that's not there. And so really, for any parent out there, and I'm sure the parents that are listening to these kinds of podcasts are already have a more expansive kind of vision, or at least more open to hearing about these things. It's if we can just cultivate an environment, a fertile soil of openness and curiosity. Even, you don't have to believe what you hear. You don't have to say, well, that's absolutely true. You definitely saw three ghosts. It doesn't, you don't have to know it's true, but if you can, if you want to cultivate a space of openness and curiosity, it's going to create safety for kids to feel like they have the power to share and their experience is being honored. And then they learn to honor it for themselves, which is ultimately the way that we navigate the world, which is learning to honor our own experience.
Yeah. And your experience is totally different than mine, right? Or experiences collectively. And also what a child or teen is going through is different than that adult perception or view. And it's a little bit more about, you may, like you just said, you may not necessarily truly believe it, but it is a, it's an aspect and a presence of saying, I believe you. I believe what you are going through is very real to you. It's validating that sense and giving them confidence to be able to explore and define the world on their own terms.
Yeah. And primarily what gets in the way is fear. Is parents get triggered, they think something bad is happening. And based on their own conditioning, it's not necessarily malicious stuff. It's just that we all have our own fear conditioning and parents have their own conditioning and framework for when they hear something and they're like, well, that must mean schizophrenia, or that must mean they have these labels in their heads or these things that could be wrong. So they go down rabbit holes and they start to act it. And that's really what gets in the way of love and openness and curiosity. But if parents can educate themselves that a lot of what, really anything that comes out of a kid's mouth is okay, and it can be understood, and it can be put ultimately within a context that makes sense and is safe, then you can get down to the level of that child and be like, all right, this is exciting. Let's just explore. Like, I know you're scared, but like, this could be a science project. And then it's a partnership, and then it's teamship. And kids can feel encouraged or excited. It's like, mom, let me tell you about what I just saw last night in my dream. And it doesn't necessarily have to be scary. And that's the process of like co-regulation, where like a child's emotions can be regulated by the emotional state of the parent. So if a parent's getting really triggered and in fear, it's understandable for various reasons, but that's likely going to mirror back something to the child that's like, oh, what I said, really scared mom. So like, it's probably scary and I probably shouldn't say it to anyone else ever again. But if parents learn to keep themselves safe, keep their own nervous systems regulated, even if it's weird, even if it's bizarre, you just practice. You like fake it till you make it. Like take some breaths, like, all right, my kid is saying some odd things, but I've learned that the best way to support them is by staying calm, breathing, recognizing my own emotions. And so they can be like, because kids are so, they're so hyper attuned. They're looking, they're like, is mom reacting? I don't know. Is dad getting a little bit nervous? And that's going to, they're going to take that feedback as to maybe I won't share everything that I saw. So yeah, if you want kids to feel safe enough to share with you, it's a good invitation to create a safe enough environment for them to do so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that applies to whether you're a parent or a teacher or regardless of what your role may be, which I'd love to get into the doctor stuff. So when you were in the private practice situation and you went through, you know, what you did, you had different clientele that would come to you. What are some things that you would maybe suggest or recommend if there are any medical professionals, healthcare professionals out there listening who are open to this? I know a lot of people who have either come to me and or since then actually started their Reiki journey and are now both practicing psychologists, psychiatrists, and have energy work and all of that. They tend to primarily work with adults, right? But there are some out there that are starting to work with children and all of that. Is there any advice or insights that you could give based on your own experiences?
Yeah, I just love to hear that there are more people becoming bridges in their own way between their own fields of more Western-based expertise and these more these alternative or energy-based modalities, because I love it. And I see that as a more integrative and expansive vision for healing for adults and for kids. So I'd say that clinicians, psychologists, therapists, doctors are not, again, qualitatively different than parents, but they have a different set of tools and there's a different set of power dynamics and authority. So if you go to a psychiatrist, very likely, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So if your training is pharmacology, you're just going to look to be medicating kids. And honestly, I think it's starting to change because a lot of psychiatrists recognize this is not super useful a lot of the time. And so with these different sets of tools, whether it's medical doctors, honestly, just learning to sympathize because they have so much training. So they're thinking about, oh, what could be wrong? Could this be the liver? Could this be? So they have this framework. It's just that I think a lot of research that's being revealed now is that a lot of chronic pain, for example, is not structural, does not benefit from surgeries, does not need medical intervention. A lot of things, and doctors are seeing this, a lot of things are based in trauma. A lot of things are based in developmental experiences. A lot of things are influenced by emotional experience, by fear conditioning, things like that. So it's, again, the same way that I'm inviting parents to expand what they think is okay and safe. For medical doctors and for those in the therapy office. And therapists are generally pretty good at being open and allowing things to emerge in a safe space. But from my experience and my training and where I worked, there are still these things that will trigger the sense of risk. One of those things would be expressing hearing voices or seeing visions. That it challenges the Western mind and it challenges the clinical training because they have these diagnostic models in their head. They have this threshold of what needs to be hospitalized. And for me, even things like suicidal ideation, you can play with it a little bit. I know the word play may not come to mind when people hear the word suicidal ideation, but we don't necessarily need to jump to certain conclusions about what it means, because even when people are in distress, there are ways to help people feel safe or to create a really expansive soil to play with what this is. And yeah, that is kind of then the responsibility of the healer, the clinician, or the doctor, whatever the authority is, to expand their world as much as possible so that whatever comes their way, they can be open. There's always going to be things that are outside our frame of reference. But the more we expand in our own selves, whatever your title is, whatever you're here to do, the more you expand, the more that what people bring you isn't going to shock you or surprise you or send you into a tailspin of, we need to go into procedure A, B, C because this kid said this. So doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists and all kinds of therapists, because of insurance-based models and things like that, a lot of their tools are diagnostic. So they give these diagnoses. And you know what? That's fine. I know where my place is, and it's a little bit outside that frame because I'm not as much a fan of that process, but you can work with diagnoses. It's just that I would be watchful of, if you're going to give a diagnosis for a kid's expression that he's hearing voices or things like that, do your best to be watchful of how that child then starts to internalize and define themselves by it. So a lot of what I see in kids that I've worked with is by the time they get to like the adolescent age, if they've had a good amount of experience in therapy and things like that, and they've struggled, then they become pretty attached to their label. So let's say very sort of stereotypically, like an adolescent girl struggling with an eating disorder or something like that. What happens is when that becomes the story, when that becomes the main narrative, all the treatment, all the things we do to help are like, we gotta help Stacy sort of get her eating disorder under control. And that's just not really, ultimately, that's a symptom of something that Stacy is wrestling with and doesn't understand fully. But if she starts to internalize that the main issue is this disorder, then it's already a limiting, a constricting of what she's allowing in to learn about her gifts or her sensitivity or her attunement or to what led her to that.
Or what created it to begin with. Yeah, you say the openness for healthcare professionals understand and at least, again, have that open mind about other kind of things, not to necessarily be so quick to diagnose, which I think we all agree with. Although I do feel like there is some semblance of comfort for me. I've shared on the other podcast on the psychic story, the episode we discussed, where for me, understanding my anxiety and that my anxiety was the catalyst to my depression was like, oh my gosh, that's so refreshing because no one showed me the correlation between it. But that was when I was in my adult years. And so then I was like, okay, well, would that, what makes me anxious? Why am I anxious? What does that look like? And it showed me a path, or I went down this path of spirituality. And the fact that I wasn't able to be open and trust the fact that I was seeing, hearing, feeling things. And which brings me kind of to my next question, because when doctors or people asked me these questions, it was the typical bland questions that you just check off a box to kind of start to get into that, I guess I'm assuming, diagnosis. But if they were to kind of maybe ask certain things differently, I think I would have been able to be more open with them and trusting about what I was experiencing, right? It was very hard for me to say, I hear voices, but I don't hear voices the way you probably think I'm hearing voices, doctor.
Yeah. And so firstly, let me say, yeah, so a framework or sort of an initial context was really helpful for you. And I think that can be helpful for lots of people. It's if we allow these labels or these initial ways of understanding sort of the symptoms, like depression and anxiety, they do exist. Like in my feelings about labels, it's not denying that these things exist. It's just about what's ultimately going to help us understand the experience and learn what we need to learn from it and move through it. Sometimes the labels become their own form of imprisonment because we get really attached to them. But initially it can be like, it can be such a relief because anything that explains things a little bit or A, helps us know it's not our fault and there's not just something inherently wrong with this.
But to your point, no one asked me why. That was the biggest question I had. That's kind of what I'm getting to. No one asked me, why do you feel anxious? Why do you feel depressed? And if somebody had asked me that existential question, I probably would have been like, I don't know, let me get back to you. Because there's so many reasons as to why. But that's where that was the catalyst that brought me to the holy crap. There were all these other things, but at the heart of it, I wasn't being able to express the fact that I was experiencing these things and I wasn't able to talk to somebody about it because I was afraid they would tell me I was crazy.
Yes. Also a reasonable fear.
A hugely reasonable fear.
Hugely reasonable fear.
Don't mean to laugh about it, but we're laughing about it because it's true. So
depending on which environment you're in. Yeah. And I think like it's simple, like why? Because to ask that question, why? Because it's not labels in themselves, it's how we relate to them. So if how we're relating to labels as like, we got to the bedrock, anxiety, we solved it. It's like, no, you didn't. You just put a label on the experience. You didn't understand really anything more about it besides being able to describe how maybe the behaviors or the sensations are presenting. That's not the same thing as understanding or going a few layers deeper. And so firstly, yes, 100%. being willing to go a few layers deeper. And for you, it sounds like that question of why you might have been like, well, let me tell you, I'm having this experience that, I mean, if it was safe enough, if it felt safe enough. What I'll say for a lot of people, and this goes back to something I would say people would say to me. So like therapy is talking about your feelings. And I would say, no, the goal of therapy is talking about your feelings. The process of therapy is understanding what you feel, because most people have no idea. And particularly kids, if they get asked why, they'll be like, you know.
Well, that's why I was clear when I was an adult.
Oh, yeah, right. When you were an adult.
As a kid, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
But you could theoretically set the stage again, like parents and kids joining together in like a science project. You could say, well, this is what you're experiencing. Let's together get curious about what this may be. And honestly, a lot of times that's what most therapies endeavor to do. They don't always succeed at it because they may not always be aware of the levels or level of expansion that things could go to. And hearing someone say, I'm hearing voice, something like that, it could lead who's ever in the room to constrict, again, send them down a more procedural rabbit hole rather than staying curious for as long as you can and allowing a child to start to maybe discern, well, this voice feels helpful. This one feels less helpful. One kind of vision or experience lights up how I feel in my heart space. One kind of makes me constrict. And that kind of processing will help a child start to learn their own sort of energetic compass of like what makes me feel good and what makes me feel scared, and learn how to trust themselves. Because from my perspective, they don't have to understand all of what they're seeing or hearing, but they can learn how to filter it through their own heart space.
And going to feelings, I say voices. To clarify, I never actually heard voices, like voices, right? It wasn't like boom voices, but it was thoughts in my head. It was these things and understand. So that's a whole nother thing. But as you're talking about feelings and emotions, I would imagine that a big piece of or part of children who are going to doctors, if they're at that stage, don't necessarily understand what it is that they're feeling, because they're either empaths or they're intuitives, they're highly sensitive. And so these feelings, it's like, it goes back to what we were saying, they may not understand why they're feeling so sad all of a sudden, if nothing has impacted that in order for them to be sad, going back to that correlation. So to me, I just feel like raising that a little bit, and I would love your insights and thoughts about what that is, because if we're talking about one, how are you feeling? And then the why are you feeling that? That's what I love about that healthy sense of curiosity, because you're exploring it together to kind of uncover it in a partnership kind of way.
Yeah. I'll go back and just firstly say, and you know what? We all hear voices. There's this idea that hearing voices is somehow dangerous or bad, but like, actually, I have heard that some people don't necessarily have a voice in their head, which is odd to me. Most of us, myself included, some people say they experience that. I would love to meet with someone like that. But in my experience, I've never met anyone like that. And that we all have and actually Eckhart Tolle had a really great line in The Power of Now. And he said he was on a subway train and he was across from someone who looked kind of homeless and who was saying a lot of thoughts out loud that people might keep inside. And he was like, but the only difference between me and him is that this is going on in my head and he's saying it out loud. And because most of us go through the world and have the craziest things going on in our head, it doesn't make us crazy. So I just want to say that. And even when we then, at least in my experience, going to the realm of what I would call hearing spirit guides and things like that, it's not so different from the voice in my head. There's a different feeling or sense that lights up in my body or like spatial awareness and stuff, but it's on a spectrum. I don't think it's like so qualitatively different. So I'll say that. And then, yeah, helping kids understand their feelings, really helping all human beings understand their feelings.
Yeah, that's like, if we can nail that in this lifetime, then we've graduated.
Yeah. And I think the first thing that comes to mind is, again, any caregiver, anyone in a position to deliver some framework or context or advice, it is in your best interest to expand your idea of where feelings can come from. Because again, if we just have a small idea of, oh, you're sad. Well, like, what happened to you today? Or who hit you? Like, if the criteria for what can make a person sad is limited, then that's the only box you're going to be able to explore. But if we start to understand that emotion energies are really, there's so many areas to explore. I'll just share one example, which is, so when I work with people, a lot of times I will support them in cultivating their own intuitive wisdom. And one really, what I found to be a really effective question is if you invite someone to tune into their emotion and you just ask them, is this yours? They don't have, most people I work with have no openness to intuition or ancestry or whatever, but a lot of them will right away say yes or no. And they'll be like, well, I don't know where that came from. But some part of people knows if you just ask like the heart space, like, is this sadness yours? And they'll be like, no. And I'll be like, they'll look as confused as the other person but it's just a way to start developing a dialogue with your own feelings, because no one's going to be able to tell you where they come from, but can come from the environment you step into, because we're energetic beings. And on some level, we're all picking up on each other. There is ancestry that we come into the world and carry our parents' emotion energies and beyond that. And then there's stuff that we're here to work through. But yeah, there's a lot of avenues. And if we do nothing else but expand the box, it gives children or adults a bigger playground to play within and to alleviate any shame or blame around what they're feeling. Because, you know, it's like sometimes I'll use the example of like someone who's really beating themselves up for like feeling such heavy sadness. Like, it's like, okay, if a total non-judgmental being just came down and entered your body, I think they would just be like, oh, this human being is experiencing this heavy emotion energy. I'm just going to get really curious about work, because they don't have any attachment to why you're sad. So they're just going to get really curious and explore. And I try to invite that same kind of curiosity into a person, because you're not to blame for why you're suddenly overcome with these symptoms of depression or this heavy sadness. On some level, it's part of the human experience. And on another level, we can start to learn from it if we do. See, it's interesting how it parallels. If parents can maintain that sense of, or a doctor can maintain that sense of openness and curiosity, then a child can start to maintain it for themselves and say, oh, this sadness is showing up. It's really uncomfortable, but let me practice getting curious. Let me invite it in, actually. Let me invite it in and to take a seat at the table and share what it's so sad about. And a lot of times, just through that inner dialogue, we learn for ourselves.
Well, you say something that to me is like killer in a good way, is that when a child, regardless of the age, it could be a teen too, says, I feel this way, sadness, happiness, whatever, frustration, anger, to say, is that yours? Is that someone else's? Or is that from a situation? That's, we normally jump, like you said, straight to, all right, what happened? And we may not necessarily know what the happened part is, but to being able to decipher, is that something that I own and an emotion I'm experiencing, or is that somebody else's, or a situation, place, or thing that I'm picking up on?
I love that. I'm about to make a public announcement for anyone listening. If you have kids who are struggling to understand their emotions and you're struggling along with them, I invite you, anytime a child comes to you and says, just invite them to place their hand on their heart. Sometimes it's like, if you see yourself in your head, ask them to take an elevator down into the heart space, almost like their eyes are peering out from their heart, to help really physically bring the awareness into the heart space. And kids honestly will be even better than this at adults, because they don't have the same fear conditioning around talking to themselves. It's like, yeah, sure, I'll ask my heart a question. Maybe it'll respond. It's all possible in kids' minds. So, and because it is, ask them to ask their heart a question. What is here for me now? Or maybe they know the feeling. Yeah. And ask them, you can ask them whatever you want, but you can start with, is that yours? And see what they say. And parents, no one has to have all the answers, but if you're willing to create a safe inquiry for kids, then they'll tell you. They'll tell you where it comes from.
Yeah. That was a hugely powerful thing for me that I didn't understand until I got to be, gosh, in my mid-30s, where I realized as an empath how what I was feeling, 90% of it had nothing to do with me. And the moment I started to realize, and that goes back to the anxiety and the depression, which is the why, I then was like, holy crap. I don't have to feel this. This is not mine. I'm letting it go. And bye-bye. I'm not saying it's quite as easy as that, but bye-bye the majority of my stress. And then the stuff that did sit with me, the emotions that did sit with me, then that allowed me to then process it, to feel it, to then ask the deeper question, the why, what do I need to do to release it, that sort of thing. So I think for kids and caretakers who are taking care of kids, that's hugely important, because if we can teach our generations, our younger generations, to process that, both mentally, physically, and emotionally, and then spiritually and energetically, how much more powerful and empowered are they going to be when they get to the state or the age that we are?
So much more. They're just going to be creators, and they're going to be able to create from the space of love and wholeness. And you know what? Like, you're right. It's not always as easy as like bye-bye, but sometimes it can be, because if you learn these energetic, and we could talk more specifically about some of the energetic tools I use, but if you just start by recognizing what's not yours, or even just considering the possibility that it's not yours, it can alleviate a lot of shame and blame. Because yeah, I am and was one of those HSPs. I always said to people, and I got a lot of diagnoses that weren't even as nice as that. So I didn't always feel so good about what I was picking up on. And I did feel like there was something wrong with me. So if we even just start to open that, it just, yeah, it creates a lot more freedom for, oh, I'm picking up on things. I'm actually, it's cool to be, it's not always comfortable to be so sensitive, but it does help us align with the highest vision for how we can navigate the world, which is to understand ourselves. And because it leads to such great compassion and empathy for when we pick up on things, we can A, learn to protect our energetic boundaries, which is super important. And that helps keep ourselves safe. And it helps me do the work that I do, because I could still pick up on lots of things, and I have, and I actually think a lot of therapists and a lot of doctors too probably struggle. They absorb so much trauma from their work. They don't necessarily know A, that they're absorbing it or picking it up. And you'll see these people who, you know, are such brave and courageous hearts get really cynical and burnt out because they don't necessarily understand how much they're taking on energetically just from being in environments like hospitals, or let alone prisons or places where there's just a lot of traumatized and low frequency energy. So self-care is a really buzzy word that gets thrown around a lot. I think it's a little misunderstood, because it's really about energy. In my opinion, it's about clearing out emotion energies, and which come along with belief energies, because they subtly or insidiously start to shape how we see the world. Like, oh, the world is such just a terrible place. I've been seeing so much trouble. It starts to shape your reality, understandably, if you're spending so much time in those environments. But anyway, starting with kids, because it starts as a kid, you absorb, you pick up on so much of the world. Your kids are sponges. So if we start to teach them how to squeeze out the sponge and keep the good stuff and let the other stuff go that's not serving them.
That really is. It's like a sponge. It's like, and then you squeeze it and then you let the water out or the energy out that you don't want to keep a part of you.
Exactly.
That's a really great visual. See, you've given me so many good exercises.
Good. I'm glad.
All right. So I do want to go to some of the tools. I would love for you to cover those in the time that we have left. Is you mentioned you use some tools for yourself, whether they are tools for healthcare practitioners that they might be able to use, or some additional tools and resources that we could provide for caretakers who have children who are sensitive.
Yeah. So this is a huge topic, and I'll share as much as I can, and then maybe I'll share some resources as well. For me, the foundation of what we can do for kids, for healthcare providers, for any human being on this earth is to understand what it means to come into present focused awareness. And so that, I'll just start with the words breath and the words meditation. Meditation has this kind of different context depending on who hears it. Some people are like, oh yeah, I do that. That's for me. Some people hear it and they're like, definitely not for me. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a monk in a temple. All it means is coming into the present moment, which, you know, is really hard for a lot of people because we're so conditioned to be thinking and achieving and blah, blah, blah. Teaching kids how to come into their bodies. Again, place a hand on your heart and just take a couple breaths in through the nose, out through the mouth. And the audible sigh actually signals to the nervous system that it activates the vagus nerve and teaches us that it's time to settle down. So really learning about the true meaning of relaxation. We lose touch with the true meaning. Some people think relaxation means going on vacation and drinking daiquiris and whatever. And like, that can be fun too, but the true meaning of nervous system regulation.
And for kids, they might not be able to do that right now. So
kids aren't necessarily able to do that. And I wouldn't recommend it anyway, because I don't do it either. But yeah, learning that they can be, this is maybe sort of a weird way of saying it, but they can be their own mother. They can be their own parent. And ideally, we have caregivers that can support us as well. But regardless, you are the caregiver for your body, and children ultimately, ideally, grow up to learn that. And you can start by seeing the efficacy of just placing a hand on your body, or a parent placing a hand on a child. Bring your awareness to this space and then breathe into this space in, out. And so in terms of breath, you can put this in the show notes. There's a type of breath called box breathing, which is really simple. It's just a four count in, a four count hold, a four count out, and then a four count hold at the bottom.
I literally got the message last night, so I will have it for this podcast, is to do an intention where we walk through the box breath.
Yeah.
So, and it's coming up. And so just blowing my mind. Spirit never ceases to amaze me. So yes, the box breath work is hugely. What you do is, and I always get this wrong. So essentially what it is, it's like square or a box, right? So there's four sides. And the intention, or when you're doing it, is like you breathe in for how long and then out for how long? What's the box?
Yeah. So like if the vision helps you, it's great. I don't even use a box or a vision. I just know in through the nose for four, in, three, four, hold at the top for four, one, two, three, four, out through the mouth for four, four, hold at the bottom for four. And then typically you do it four times. And that kind of stuff is pretty easy for kids to remember. And I did this a lot with kids I worked with. And so there's so many different avenues we could explore. There's 478, which is another easy one, which you can just honestly type in 478 online and you'll get it. There's alternate nostril. There's all kinds of, we can get into Kundalini and all kinds of more active stuff, which is really powerful, holotropic. There's a whole realm of breathwork that is super powerful. But for kids, so there's that basic stuff. There's also ways you can make it fun. Like during COVID, when I had to start working with kids online, it was a more difficult shift than with adults, because kids really respond to that and that containment. A lot of the kids I worked with loved Marvel movies and superheroes. Maybe your kids do too. And I would actually have them, I'd be like, who's your favorite superhero? Or their Marvel character. And they can all name like 30 Marvel characters. So we'd have a list, and let's say it would be Thor. And I'd be like, what does Thor do and what does Thor say? And they know, they'll be like, Thor, hammer. I forget, like the hammer of Thor. And then they'll throw the hammer. But so it'll be like a pose and then an expression, almost like a chant, and then an action. And that's like a very creative way of coming into present focused awareness, because they're breathing. I'll probably sneak in some breath work as they're doing the pose. See, you can get creative with it. Anything that helps kids come into their body, feel that, and it can be that shared experience. And if parents want to do it along with their kids, it's empowering. There's a lot of research on just posturing and sort of channeling the energy of a powerful person. All this stuff is really powerful. So in my work, I have a way that I teach a kind of visioning and what I call sort of working with frequencies of light. And I can, if people want it, I can share some meditations online and stuff like that. But ultimately, I'd say like visualization, breath, and then just, yeah, bringing awareness into the body. And sometimes having a phrase, if it's a superhero phrase, or even just a very loving phrase, helps, they're all tools for creating this sometimes overwhelming idea of meditation, and making it really accessible. The 30-second meditation can be standing like your favorite superhero, and because it's teaching the nervous system that it's safe. And really, in my opinion, the other side of sort of trauma healing and nervous system safety is intuitive knowing and opening up your gifts, because once the nervous system knows that it's safe and you can come into that relaxation or through breath or whatever, then you're more open to things, gifts that are meant to come through, messages, things like that.
Well, and then they're clear, they are grounded, they're protected, they have that healthy sense of curiosity that you were talking about, that just makes everything more in flow versus that scary piece of it. And that deeper sense of trying to understand and know the why without having to force it, right?
Yeah. And that word grounding is a really good word. I like one thing, you know, I'll say is you can just invite kids to sort of imagine what I call a grounding cord. So you could think of it as a gold chain or a tree trunk or a waterfall or rainbows or a string of monkeys or whatever is fun to them, and see it attaching at the bottom of their spine and just shooting down into the core of the earth and make it as big as their body and just see it harnessing them in and be descriptive about it to help them feel safe, like the safest, most comfortable seatbelt. That kind of vision, it does channel your energy to feel connected and rooted. All that stuff is super helpful.
Yeah. And then the one final thing I did want to say about that, about grounding, is a lot of us don't necessarily know what it is, right? Like, I realize that we talk a lot about it, or at least I did for a while. And my spirit guides and angels had to remind me. They were like, okay, Nicole, like, remember, we're these spiritual beings. And this is, I promise you, has to do with kids. For those that are listening, we come onto this earth and we come from the other side, and we then are in these physical bodies. And for a long time at the first part of our lives, we're like kind of bouncing back and forth a little bit from spirit world into our physical bodies and everything else. As we start to be more integrated with who we are as this human being and the experiences we have on earth, we are still sometimes having these spiritual experiences, but we're not learning the techniques to be grounded within our physical bodies into earth. So that's where, if like people aren't necessarily feeling, or children not necessarily feeling themselves or what that is, that grounding, those grounding techniques allow you to feel more connected and centered within your body. So that's what it means, at least to me, or what I've been told. I don't know if you have a different perspective.
That's honestly the best description of grounding that I've ever heard, because it's so true. We're non-physical beings and we're coming into these human bodies.
And we're bouncing around.
So like, I think the human form comes from the earth, but the true nature of our spirit doesn't necessarily. So we come into these bodies that evolve from the earth. So it's really helpful to ground down to the earth, the being that is Mother Earth, and feel connected to that source. So I love that description.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thanks. I just felt led to share that because they were like, explain what it means. So that's why it's important for kids, because they in particular have more recently been on the other side. As we get older, we kind of, anyway, it's important no matter what age you are, but having and teaching them those techniques helps them become more centered and feel connected to both their spiritual and their energetic and physical bodies as a whole. And then again, I keep getting the word empowering as we're talking. So that is the reason why we wanted to make sure that the grounding piece is so important for kids and to share that. So I just want to say thanks. That's Dr. Daniel Atkins, everyone. If people want to reach out to you and get more information from you, you have a podcast, you have a website, you obviously offer sessions and other things. Please share more about the work you do and how people can get a hold of you.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I just want to express gratitude for you having me on and feeling that I have something of value to share. It's my pleasure. Yeah. I have a website, drdanielatkins.com. I have an Instagram and a podcast. I do still work with people individually. I also do workshops. And the nature of my work is really ultimately, on an ultimate level, it's helping people expand out of those boxes of conditioning and limitation and discovering the possibilities and highest vision for their lives. A lot of that comes with processing and healing trauma in all its forms. And sometimes so it's that same process of curiosity. If my box is just more expansive than some, and some are even more expansive than mine, but mine tends to include ancestral lineages, sometimes past lives, sometimes I just don't set any restrictions on where things are coming from and what we're carrying. And from my own experience, I've learned how to uncover and work with the energies that we're carrying and clear them and make way for ultimately what happens with a lot of people that I work with, even if they have no interest in any sort of spiritual ideas, is as we heal it, people tend to become more intuitive. Because a lot of people, whether they call it intuition or not, they want to learn how to make decisions for themselves. And a lot of times trauma constricts and makes it really confusing, and you can't tell what's helpful or not. People put themselves in dangerous situations without knowing. So a lot of what I teach and help people discover for themselves is clearing out what's no longer serving them and actually coming into alignment with a level of discernment and trust in the heart compass, not necessarily the thinking mind, because a lot of that is just to piggyback on what you said. So is sort of the spiritual being coming into the body. And then a lot of times the mind is such a tricky place because the mind is a non-physical entity too. So if we're so caught up in thoughts, we talked a lot about emotions, but a lot of thoughts aren't yours either. So a lot of thought energies that just come in. Yeah. So if we get caught there for too long, we'll get really ungrounded. And that's more accessible for people because most people know what it's like to overthink. So that's why it's so important to ground and come into the heart space, which has a more, feelings aren't facts either, but they have a more authentic portrayal of where we are and what we need to keep ourselves safe and then ultimately align with what we want to create in this world. So that's a snapshot of what I do. But yeah, if you're interested, feel free to check things out or reach out.
Well, not easy work. Again, thank you for doing what you do and sharing your insights and tips and all the things for people. And yes, if you're interested, you can reach him, Dr. Daniel Atkins. That's ATKINS.com. Thank you so much again for being on. Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story Kids Edition. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. For more information, go to apsychicstory.com or follow Psychic Kids on Instagram.